From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Ari Snyder with the news on This Day in Maine, Friday, January 31st, 2025.
This Day in Maine is made possible by Now You're Cooking, celebrating 24 years of selling cookware, kitchen tools, gadgets, and fine wine on historic Front Street in downtown Bath, open 7 days a week.
Maine's plans to build a new facility on Sears Island to support an ocean wind project have been undercut by the Trump administration, which is hostile to offshore wind. And now a state lawmaker is pushing a bill to make sure the island is never developed. Peter McGuire has more.
Republican Representative Reagan Paul of Winterport wants to extend a conservation easement over the entire 941-acre state-owned island in Searsport. That would block the state from building its planned wind power port, which has already experienced multiple setbacks. Maine has lost out on 3 federal funding opportunities for the project, and now President Trump has halted all new wind power developments. Paul, who opposes offshore wind development, says it's the right time to protect the island forever.
I just think it could be beneficial just stop having that conversation. It doesn't have to happen. We can protect the island and look forward to generation sources that are better for the Maine environment, Maine ratepayer, and the community.
The Maine Department of Transportation says it is reviewing the legislation ahead of a public hearing, which has not been scheduled. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Peter McGuire.
A trade group representing global automakers is suing the state of Maine over its automotive right to repair law. The Alliance for Automotive Innovation filed suit in federal district court in Bangor. The law, which went into effect earlier this year, requires automakers to make diagnostic repair information available to vehicle owners. But the trade group argues that automakers can't comply with it because the state hasn't designated an independent entity responsible for administering access to the platform where repair data can be made available. The Alliance for Automotive Innovation also sued Massachusetts in 2020 to block that state's right to repair law. A spokesperson for Maine's Automotive Right to Repair Committee says that 84% of Mainers voted in favor of the law, and that the group will work with the Attorney General in, quote, defending car owners and consumers. A Maine man serving a life sentence for the kidnapping, sexual assault, and murder of a 12-year-old girl in 1989 will not be getting a new trial. A Superior Court judge has rejected Dennis DeShane's latest appeal, saying new DNA evidence is, quote, weak, vague, and without practical meaning. Susan Sharon has more.
DeShane argued for a new trial based on new and enhanced testing of DNA on several items recovered from the woods in Bowdoin, where Sarah Cherry was killed. The tests show that DeShane is excluded as a contributor of DNA on 4 of the items, but that he could be included on 2 others. In his 23-page ruling, Superior Court Justice Bruce Maloney says the test results are limited by physical degradation over the past 36 years, which can cause DNA to become undetectable or disappear. In addition, Maloney points out that the DNA samples were extremely small, and they were subject to potential contamination because they were carried out of the woods by people who were not wearing masks, gloves, or other protective gear. Taken with what he called the large body of circumstantial evidence linking DeShane to the crime, and with multiple incriminating statements made by DeShane, the judge said he was convinced that a new trial would still produce the same result. A similar request for a new trial was rejected by the Maine Supreme Court in 2015. This case is exhausted, Justice Maloney wrote. Perhaps now the poor dead child might rest. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
Peace and justice advocates in Bangor today condemned a slew of executive orders from the Trump administration, which they say are already harming Maine people. Representatives from 6 groups, including the Maine People's Alliance and the Peace and Justice Center of Eastern Maine, expressed concern for federal workers and federally funded programs, including cancer research and Meals on Wheels. Event organizer Larry Danziger says people frustrated by the administration should engage with community organizations and take action.
People should act on their anger and their frustration and their hurt.
The advocates called on Maine's congressional delegation to stop what they call Trump's lawless actions. A national biofuels company says it plans to site a new plant at the former Great Northern Paper Mill in Millinocket. Castle Rock Biofuels will convert logging residue from local forestry operations into 20 million gallons of bio-oil per year, says company's CEO, John Murphy.
When a timber company has gone in and harvested a plot of land for timber, there is kind of this byproduct that's left over, which is tops, limbs, and branches. There's no other real commercial use for it. And so when it gets left behind, it's a forest fire hazard. It actually impedes forest growth, and it emits biogenic carbon as it rots.
Murphy says bio-crude from wood produces much lower emissions than traditional heating oil. He says the plant processing the wood will be powered by electricity from the nearby hydropower dam in Brookfield. The facility is expected to be operational by 2027, and according to Our Katahdin, a community development nonprofit, the new project should create 150 construction jobs and, once up and running, 80 full-time jobs in the area. And now it's time for Maine's Political Pulse, our regular look at government and politics with Maine Public's chief political correspondent Steve Missler and State House correspondent Kevin Miller. Let's start with one of President Trump's most drastic and controversial actions, an attempt to freeze all federal grants and loans approved by Congress. The White House eventually walked back that effort, but Kevin, how would shutting off federal funding impact Maine?
Yeah, well, it would have a potentially enormous impact, depending on how it's implemented. But the problem was the Trump administration did a really bad job explaining how it would be done. And that's where the confusion bordering on chaos, that's where it all stemmed from in Maine and across the country. The White House had said that this spending freeze wouldn't apply to Medicaid and food stamps and housing assistance, but it did initially. And the Maine Department of Health and Human Services, along with other state programs around the country, they temporarily lost access to the federal portal that they used to draw down federal Medicaid funds. The same goes for Maine Housing and public housing authorities. And then there was just this uncertainty about the funding status in so many other programs like Meals on Wheels and Easter Seals and these community action agencies that give out heating assistance and do elder care programs. It sounds like they've all regained access to that funding within a day or so. But as we know, Maine is an older state with high levels of poverty in some areas. So any changes to Medicaid, Meals on Wheels, LIHEAP, those are all critical support systems. So they were really concerned.
And how did Democrats, both in Maine and in other states, react to this move?
Yeah, it's really interesting, Ari, because pretty much since the election, there's been this sense that Democrats are reeling, disorganized, and not entirely sure how to combat Trump 2.0. You know, there's been some that argued that Dems can't fight every extreme move like they did during his first term because they'll basically punch themselves out and the public will tune them out. At the same time, the sheer blitz of Trump's moves has been pretty alarming to activists, and they're just sort of like, where are the Democrats? Well, this funding freeze gambit was the first time I've seen the party jump out with swift, unified, and arguably effective condemnation. It was sort of this clarion call, and it just happens to be the preferred tack of the Maine Democratic Party's new chairman, Charlie Dingman, who was just recently won election. When I talked to him this week, he said it was impossible to chart a new course for the party without highlighting the program that the Trump administration was unleashing on the American people. And this funding freeze was a perfect example because of all the uncertainty, worry, and as Kevin mentioned, the chaos that ensued.
Because all that really matters for that administration is supporting the desire of the wealthiest people in the world to have even more for themselves and to distract the rest of us by persuading us that we're different from each other and should be fighting with each other.
And Ari, I think you're going to hear more criticism of Trump's kitchen cabinet of billionaires from Democrats. It fits pretty neatly in their long crusade about taxing the rich and how the economic system is tilted towards those who already have wealth and abundance.
So Congress, of course, controls the so-called power of the purse. Under current law, presidents are obligated to spend money as Congress directs most of the time. But the Trump administration is challenging that long-accepted arrangement. So, Kevin, what might happen next in that fight, and how does Maine Senator Susan Collins factor into it?
Right. So that big dust up that we just talked about over Trump's short-lived attempt to freeze federal funding, that's in all likelihood just the first skirmish in a much bigger battle over who controls federal spending, Congress or the White House. Most of the decisions about federal dollars actually come from the House and Senate Appropriations Committees. After 15 years of serving on the Senate Appropriations Committee, Senator Collins became the chairwoman of the panel this year. And that's a big deal for Collins, and she would argue for Maine, because those two appropriations chair positions are two of the most important and powerful jobs in Congress because they have significant influence over how this massive federal budget is divvied up. So kind of re-enter Trump in this whole situation. He's not a fan of the idea that the president basically has to live with and implement all these spending decisions that come from Congress. Now, I'm going to use a word that's pretty wonky, kind of a DC buzzword here, but people may start hearing it. It's called impoundment. That's when the president or the executive branch basically cancels or withholds or reduces the amount of funding that Congress has approved. Trump intends to challenge a 1974 law that really made it harder for presidents to ignore the will of Congress on spending. And as chairwoman of the Senate Appropriations Committee, Collins will undoubtedly have an interest in this fight, I'd say.
So pulling our focus back down to the state level for a minute, gun control efforts are once again top of mind in Augusta and causing some sharp divisions there. Steve, what's going on?
So recently, Ari, gun control activists held this event in Augusta to showcase this effort to get a red flag bill on the November ballot. Now, we've done a lot of reporting on this in the Breakdown Project, but for those who are unfamiliar, this prospective referendum is viewed by Governor Janet Mills as a real threat to this yellow flag law that she drafted alongside a prominent gun rights group 6 years ago. Now, both the red flag and the yellow flag proposals or laws are what's known as extreme risk protection orders, which are basically designed to take guns from dangerous people. The governor's yellow flag bill really prioritizes gun owners' rights in this confiscation process, whereas the red flag proposal that activists introduced recently is more streamlined and allows family members to directly petition a judge to remove someone's guns. It has fewer steps, and that's what gun control activists want. But Mills, who once supported a red flag proposal, has mounted an all-out defense of her yellow flag law and even brought it up during her budget address this week.
The law provides due process, and it will survive legal scrutiny. And I don't believe a private citizen should have to navigate what can be a complex and confusing court procedure by themselves, especially when they're in the middle of already difficult circumstances.
I think it was noteworthy, Ari, that the governor used this statewide address to criticize the red flag referendum, and it certainly raises questions about whether she'll be more involved in campaigning against it, should it qualify for the November ballot.
That was Maine Public's chief political correspondent, Steve Missler, and State House correspondent, Kevin Miller. You can also read our Political Pulse newsletter at mainepublic.org/pulse. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Join us tomorrow morning at 8 for Weekend Edition on Maine Public Radio. I'm Ari Snyder. Thanks for listening.